It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Live from Everywhere USA, it's Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Oh, yes, it is, with Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy today from the tippy-tippy top of the world-famous Fox News headquarters in New York City. Yes, indeed, New York, New York, that city that never sleeps, and now the very epicenter of stupid. Hello there from New York, uptown, downtown, all around the town. We are going to see why international bad guys like Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin are laughing at us today. Where to start? Let's start downtown, where Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg's idiotic prosecution of President Donald Trump is in its fourth day of testimony. Look, I'm just like Jimmy. I am not in the tank for Donald Trump. He is the presumptive GOP nominee and is thus the only thing standing between us and 4 more years of President Gaffa Day. So I fully intend to support Donald Trump, but I'm being intellectually honest in telling you that if it were Joe Biden's name as the defendant on Alvin Bragg's case, I would still be throwing the challenge flag. Bragg's case is a joke. It's not politics. It's not justice. It's politics. About 90% of criminal cases in the United States are prosecuted by the 2,300 or so district attorneys across more than 3,100 counties. And until fairly recently, this has worked very, very well in this country. You know, elected prosecutors of both parties, for the most part, have held up their end of the social contract by impartially enforcing the laws passed by their state legislatures. And then along came George Soros, the billionaire George Soros, who started pumping millions of dollars into district attorney campaigns and particularly blue precincts across the country. And he did so in the correct belief that if you can corrupt the criminal justice system, you are well on your way to dismantling the entire society. Alvin Bragg, along with other far-left attorneys general, like, say, George Gascon in Los Angeles, is a George Soros DA. George Soros helped put him in office. A George Soros DA is, by definition, radically left. And what you get with a rogue prosecutor like Alvin Bragg is a district attorney's office that uses the awesome power of that office to persecute political enemies while simultaneously allowing real crimes that affect real people to go totally unpunished. And that's what's going on in New York today. And thus you have thugs in New York coming up on attractive women and punching them in the face, only to be immediately released back onto the street under New York's no cash bail policy. You have all the things at the drugstore behind lock and key requiring you to find a store employee so you can buy a can of shave cream. That's what happens when you don't enforce the laws that affect real people. In other words, law enforcement in liberal cities like New York, L.A., and San Francisco has entered the upside down. In a properly functioning criminal justice system, one that's not operating purely for political purposes, Trump wouldn't be in a New York City courtroom today, even as we speak, for the simple reason that there is no crime. He paid hush money to keep something that was embarrassing to him quiet. He shouldn't have done that thing that was embarrassing. He shouldn't have gotten mixed up with a porn star. We can all look at that and say, well, Donald, why did you do that? But there's no crime. And trying to silence somebody who would use it to embarrass him is not a crime. And entering into a non-disclosure agreement, it's called an agreement. Both parties have agreed. That's not a crime. And as I said, it's getting embarrassing. You know, our justice system for nearly 2.5 centuries was the model of the rest of the world. It's becoming a laughingstock, and it's bad guys like Xi and Vlad who are doing the laughing. Here's George Washington University professor and former U.S. prosecutor and Fox News contributor, Jonathan Turley, earlier this week, Cut 6.
What is clear is in this case, Trump is right. I mean, this is an embarrassment. I mean, the fact that we are actually talking about this case being presented in a New York courtroom leaves me in utter disbelief. I I mean, the arguments today did, in fact, capture all the problems here. You know, you had this misdemeanor under state law where that had run out. This is going back to related to the 2016 election. And they zapped it back into life by alleging that there was a campaign finance violation under the federal laws that doesn't exist. The Department of Justice doesn't view it this way.
Yeah, so there you have that. So that's what's going on downtown. Not far from where I'm sitting right this minute here in Midtown, President Biden is in the studios of Sirius XM, that's almost literally next door, doing a softball interview with Howard Stern. Last night, he was at a fundraiser here in the burbs of New York with Michael Douglas and Catherine Zeta-Jones. His campaign of staff is, of course, pounding down the Xanax to calm their nerves. That's because they know that at any second, he could produce a moment like this one from earlier this week, cut 26.
I see an economy that grows from the middle out and the bottom up, where the wealthy pay their fair share, so we can have child care, paid leave, and so much more, and still reduce the federal deficit and increase economic growth. Folks, imagine what we can do next. Four more years. Pause.
Four more years.
It's prompter 101, Mr. President. When they put pause in the script, in parentheses, it means you're supposed to pause, not actually read it. The goal was for the crowd to spontaneously start chanting four more years. But the problem with Biden is he can't process the words on a teleprompter any better than he can process the words out of his own brain, and that gets us to the place where even the reliably liberal and Democrat-supporting New York Times is put out with Biden, as they said in this statement they published yesterday, and this is a quote, "For anyone who understands the role of the free press in a democracy, it should be troubling that President Biden has so actively and effectively avoided questions from independent journalists during his term," end quote. Now, let me ask you, if you had the job of being a Biden handler, what would you do? You'd be doing exactly what they're doing, keeping him from the press and doing it to the extent that they can, keeping him from any place where he can speak off the cuff. Now, let's move further uptown to Columbia University, site of the anti-Jewish, anti-American, pro-idiot protests at the once prestigious Columbia University. Those of us old enough to remember the campus protest of 1960s, and here we are, full circle, Columbia University. It's where college protests against the Vietnam War got started in the spring of 1968. It was at Columbia that students took over Hamilton Hall, a classroom and administration building, forcing university administrators to eventually call in the NYPD to restore order. And you got to give the kids in 1968 credit. At least those kids understood what they were protesting. The 1968 campus protests that started here in New York at Columbia University, and then spread across the country, are credited by scholars who study these things with pushing American higher education sharply to the left. And now here we are, 56 years later, back at Columbia. And that leftward push has American higher education on the edge of the Marxist abyss. Yesterday, we learned of protest organizers circulating a pamphlet titled, "First We Take Columbia, Lessons from the 1968 Occupations Movement." It says in that pamphlet, "Occupations draw strength from the specter of a riot. Outside agitators need to be welcomed in." You know, and think about that. These kids, it's hard to get into Columbia. These kids are supposedly the best and brightest of our youth. And if your kid is especially bright, you can send your kid to Columbia for just $90,000 a year, and this is what it'll buy you. If Columbia and schools like it had leadership and faculty comprised of sentient adults rather than the committed leftists that now populate way too many campuses across the country, the agitating students would be expelled, the outside agitators would be arrested for trespassing, and classes would resume, and graduation would happen next month. We have a USC student who is USC, they've canceled graduation because of the campus protest. Isn't it interesting that these poor kids were denied high school graduation by COVID, so they didn't have a high school graduation? Now, as the timing works, 4 years later, they're going to find themselves unable to attend their graduation from college because of a bunch of knuckleheads calling Israel genocidic. I mean, think about how far off the rails college has gotten. All of this, the Trump kangaroo court prosecution, a president who can't be counted on to put together a coherent sentence, and college campuses that have turned into Marxist indoctrination camps could get you down. But right here on Fox Across America Today, we're not going to let that happen. All of this actually could be working towards something good. That's because eyes are being opened, and the full rot that has taken over our justice system and our colleges and universities is now visible in all its fragrant flower, and it can now be seen by even the casual observer. Americans don't cotton much to unfairness. Trump is being criminally prosecuted for the sole purpose of impeding his effort to gain re-election. In the final analysis, that's not really aimed at Donald Trump. It's aimed at the ordinary working Americans who want to vote for Donald Trump. So far, all of the Trump indictments have boomeranged on his persecutors, and word is that since he's stuck in New York during this trial, and since the far-left judge presiding over the trial won't let Trump waive his right to be present, Trump is working on a deal to hold a rally at Madison Square Garden that will get him a whole lot of what the political experts call earned media, that is to say, free coverage. If that rally is anything like the impromptu appearance by Trump at a New York City construction site earlier this week, it's going to be, as he says, huge. Though it's unlikely, it's not completely crazy to believe that New Yorkers have had enough of the crime and the chaos to the point that the state could be flipped or it could be made a lot closer. It's unlikely, but no longer so implausible that you can't say it with a straight face. People are getting fed up. Look for that to have consequences. Trump turning the lemon of his trial into campaign lemonade, that's what Donald Trump does. As to the anti-Semitic campus protests, themselves manifestations of the larger issue of universities falling off the left edge are crazy. Parents are starting to ask pointed questions. They're starting to ask, what's a lifetime spent saving up and putting off of going on vacation, going to pay for it the schools that our sons and daughters want to attend? You know, and wealthy alums like New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft closing their checkbooks, withholding donations. It took a long time for the higher education pendulum to swing so far to the left. It's going to take time for it to swing back. The price to be paid for having a far-left, highly politicized district attorney is becoming evident by the crime that's exploding in deep blue cities like New York. People are noticing. And as I say to my family all the time when they get upset, pendulums swing. And perhaps the swinging of that pendulum has begun. And if so, good for Bob Kraft and others like him, and good for the parents who are asking the tough questions, perhaps we are seeing a long overdue awakening and a critical first step on the long road to restoring sanity to our colleges and to our justice system. That's what I say. What about you? 888-788-9910. Hey, we got a big Friday show lined up for you today. Later this hour, Congresswoman Nicole Amaliotakis from New York's 11th District will be here. We have Joe Concha later in the show. We're hoping to get Jonathan Turley to talk about the Trump prosecution in the second hour. Taylor Riggs, one of my favorite guests when I get to fill in, will join us. And Mark Brnovich, former Arizona Attorney General, will be with us along with you at 888-788-9910. It's Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failey here on Fox Across America. Don't go away.
You're listening to Fox Across America with Jimmy Failey.
A very inventive, troubled comedian.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.
Listen, since I'm here, let me extend an invitation here. Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failey. Follow me in my weekly column. I got a fresh one up just this very morning at youtellmetexas.com. It's Texas because that's where I'm from. Normally, I do the show when I fill in for Jimmy from Texas. Happened to be in New York today, and you don't have to be from Texas to be a part of You Tell Me Texas. I say what's on my mind. You say what's on yours. It's a conversation. It's a two-way street. youtellmetexas.com. So here we are in New York City. A lot going on in New York City. Donald Trump is downtown I don't know, about 6 or 7 miles from where I'm sitting right now, on trial for a non-crime. But he's still taking the time to speak out about what's going on elsewhere in the city, not the least of which Columbia University, way uptown, where these protests are happening, a la 1968. Here he is on Joe Biden's lack of response and lack of clear messaging on the subject. Cut 17.
Very importantly, as you look at the various colleges all over the country and beyond colleges, because it's happening in other areas too, you see what's happening on the front having to do with Palestine and Israel and protests and hate, anger. Biden is sending an absolutely horrible message. Horrible, horrible message. He has no idea how to message. He can't speak. He can't put two sentences together. He doesn't know what to do. This is not our president. This is somebody that shouldn't be doing what he's doing because he can't do it. He can't do it well.
So that's Donald Trump talking about Joe Biden's really deafening silence on the chaos that's breaking out on college campuses. Meanwhile, the chaos that's breaking out on our college campuses is having real-world impact on real-world people. Now, listen to this young lady. Her name is Gracie. She's a USC student, and she is now going to be denied walking across the stage to receive her diploma at graduation, just as she was 4 years ago during COVID. Here she is, cut 21.
I'm in shock right now. We, as a whole senior class, have never had a real graduation because of COVID first, which we thought was like a one-time thing, like we're the class that got screwed over. It is what it is, unlucky. Now, USC just canceled it. And of course, USC, we've all worked so hard to get here. USC, I'm sure you know, is not an easy school to get into. And so everyone that goes here is very accomplished, like had worked really hard to get in, and now they just canceled our freaking graduation.
You know what? If I were her, she's probably a good, you know, well-indoctrinated liberal, probably, because they did their job on her. But whether she is or she isn't, that's not the point. The point is that, once again, there are real consequences to bad leadership. She's right. And if I were her, and if I were her parents, who paid upwards of $100,000 a year for her to go to USC, and she were denied the moment, the one time in your life when you get to receive your college diploma, if she were denied two graduations in a row, I'd be upset. She's every right to be upset. And what USC could do instead of cowering to these knuckleheads, USC could stand up and do what they ought to do: sweep them off the campus, punish the students who are behaving the way they are, take care of them via the sanction the school has over violation of campus policy. All campuses, all colleges have an honor code, have a behavior code. Punish those kids for doing what they shouldn't be doing, and get the outside agitators off the campus, get them off, have them arrested for trespassing, restore order, exercise some leadership, and be about the business of education on college campuses. This is not hard. And the fact that we have let it get to this place, and the fact that it is the college campuses that break out into this chaos whenever there's any kind of controversy, whenever there's any kind of a big story, it tells you that we don't have, we've lost what used to be the envy of the world in our higher education. And it is time to restore order. And it is time to get back to the business of educating rather than indoctrinating. And that could start right here in New York City, not far from where I'm sitting at Columbia University, by simply saying to the agitators, you got to stop. And if you don't, we're going to do something about it. Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla here on Fox Across America. More of the show's coming up. Stay with us. It is Fox Across America. It's Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy today. He's traveling. He will be back on Monday. Meanwhile, it's you and me and the phones later at 888-788-9910. And right now, Congresswoman Nicole Malliotakis from New York's 11th District, which is Staten Island and the southern part of Brooklyn. Congresswoman, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
It's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Listen, there's so many things, so many topics in so little time. So let's just dive right in. You're here. You're a New York representative. What your thoughts on, once again, 56 years later after the first college protest and the protesting the Vietnam War at Columbia, here we are, come full circle.
Yeah, well, I've never thought we'd see this type of anti-Semitism on America's campuses here in the United States, in particular in New York City, where we are the most diverse and welcoming city. We have the largest Jewish population in the world, and yet we're seeing this type of anti-Semitism being allowed to fester, and it's truly outrageous, and it's why I've introduced legislation that would strip federal funding from these institutions that promote or allow these events to take place without accountability. When we met with the Jewish students, you should know that they're seeing swastikas on the campus. They're being subjected to that. They're being spat on. They're being called derogatory racial slurs. It is outrageous, and is a fine, clear line, actually, between the freedom of speech and anti-Semitism, and that is why I've called for the Columbia University president to resign, because she can't control the campus or keep her students safe.
Well, and that is evident. And the thing is, you know, and I was talking with a friend of mine back home about about what's going on campus. He says, well, it's time to change out these presidents. Well, fine. What are you going to do about the faculty?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's exactly what my legislation would do. If these faculty members are not held accountable, these institutions should lose their federal funding. I mean, why are taxpayers paying to pay for professors that are indoctrinating their children and spreading this type of hateful agenda? As a matter of fact, Columbia University hired a professor that a few days after October 7th, this professor went online and praised Hamas, praised Hezbollah. And why is that individual there? Why are they not fired? And so it is outrageous to me, and that's why my bill would actually put a process in place that if they don't hold professors that participate or promote anti-Semitism accountable, then they could have their federal funding stripped.
Well, you know, there's really almost literally no such thing as a private university in America today for the reason you just said. All of them, nearly all of them, receive federal funds, either directly in the forms of grants and just direct payments and absolutely through tuition funded by federal loans.
That's right. And as part of stripping federal funding, those students shouldn't be allowed to use student aid, taxpayer-funded student aid at those particular institutions. And one of the other things that I'm pushing is for visas, student visas, to be stripped from foreign students who are participating and promoting anti-Semitism on these campuses. It is a privilege to come to the United States of America to study, and we need to make sure that the people who are coming are not going to be spreading hateful rhetoric and also anti-American rhetoric. You know, we're going to have people burning the American flag or saying death to America, then maybe they should be going, and actually they should be going to educate themselves elsewhere, and they should not be welcome here.
Congresswoman Nicole Malliotakis is with us here on Fox Across America. All right, so let's just do a little segue here. We're in New York. I'm a visitor. I'm from Texas. I don't live in New York like you do, but here I am. And it's amazing what's going on the island of Manhattan, even as I'm sitting here speaking. Downtown, we have Donald Trump being tried for a non-crime. Mm-hmm. Here in Midtown, we have Joe Biden being interviewed by Howard Stern in what I'm sure is a softball interview. And then uptown, we have the chaos at Columbia University. Let's go downtown. What has happened to sanity with respect to enforcement of the law and respect for the justice system in your state?
Yeah, you know what? It's really interesting. Donald Trump is the only one being treated below the law here in New York, because everyone else is treated above the law. They are being released left and right from jail. Bail reform in New York has released violent repeat offenders over and over again. They don't cooperate in New York City with sanctuary policy. They have a sanctuary policy that they don't cooperate with deporting illegal immigrants who are here committing crimes. We've had illegal immigrants who are here committing crimes over and over again. One had 8 arrests, and guess what? They go back to the luxury hotel room that we, the taxpayers, are funding because our mayor believes that everyone's entitled to free housing. It is truly outrageous. And Donald Trump is the only person that's being treated below the law. They're upcharging things, making up charges, and it's unconscionable. And so we have to continue to stand up against it, expose it, and hopefully Alvin Bragg, again, we hopefully won't be reelected. But let's put it this way. nobody was charging President Trump for anything. In fact, they declined it. The FEC, the DOJ, Alvin Bragg's predecessor. So this is certainly political. And the fact that they're bringing in now a DOJ former prosecutor for somebody who worked for Biden to come in and help prosecute is truly outrageous. And it is really obviously politicized. But you know what? The people in New York see it. They see it. And they are rallying behind President Trump, particularly in my district, overwhelmingly supporting the president because they see what this injustice that's taking place while they let illegal immigrants, gang members, drug smugglers, and people who are repeat career criminals on the streets.
Well, how much crime, how much chaos, how much lawlessness will voters in New York continue to tolerate before they say, let's try something else? Because I would think by now they'd start saying, the people we've been voting for aren't helping us.
That's right. I mean, I'm hoping it's soon. Look, Lee Zeldin almost won the election last year. If it wasn't for people who fled New York because they were so fed up, Lee Zeldin would be governor right now, and that would have been all the difference in the world. All the things that people hate about New York politicians, the congestion pricing that they're trying to charge us $15 to drive into Manhattan, the policies keeping us not safe, whether it's the bail reform or the raise your age law that treat teenagers who are committing horrific crimes, violent crimes, carjackings as well, releasing them and treating them in family court versus instead of criminal court. The illegal immigration, the protection of these individuals and forcing taxpayers to pay billions to house them and take care of them when they're having a hard time living and affording New York. I hope people have had enough. I've seen the wave and the changes in my district where we've been able to replace a number of Democrat assembly members and council members, and I hope that really spreads across the city. In fact, this last year, we elected a Republican city council person right in AOC's district, which was amazing. That sent a strong message. So we got to keep on hammering away and exposing what the Democrats have done to New York and showing that all the things that they dislike right now about New York was brought to us by the Democratic Party.
Congresswoman Nicole Malliotakis with us here on Fox Across America. So, you know, I said at the start of the show, you weren't here, but I said at the start of the show, I see reason for optimism for this reason. Parents are starting to wake up to what their money is paying for at college, and they're starting to make their decisions accordingly. And there's this it wasn't a rally, but it was pretty close. Donald Trump showed up at a construction site, and just the fervor, how grateful and how happy the people were to meet Trump at the construction site here in New York, since he can't leave because he's tied down by this trial. And he said, I think we can flip New York. That seems to me unlikely, but it's not completely implausible like it would have been a year or two or 5 years ago.
Well, what I would say is Lee Zeldin, I think, set a really good tone for us to be able to win and flip New York. But more importantly, I think if people are looking at this logically, they're seeing that the open border crisis that has created a really mass migration crisis in New York, where we're using billions and billions of tax dollars that they're cutting services from citizens to pay for people who are here illegally, and not just here illegally, committing crimes on top of it. So people are really fed up with the shelters for migrants popping up all over the city of New York. They're truly fed up with the crime and the deterioration of quality of life. If they're really upset with congestion pricing, which is just another cash grab tax to enter a borough in the city in which you live, if they're tired of heroin injection centers, which are community centers where addicts can go and shoot up, if they're tired of all this, Donald Trump's the person who can stop it. He was the one who had the DOJ stop heroin injection centers. It wasn't until Biden came in that Bill de Blasio opened them. Okay, that's number one. Number two, he's the one that's going to secure the border, just like he did last time, until President Biden came in and dismantled the border with 60-plus policy changes. He's the one that's going to finally help us clean up New York and at least use his federal authority to be able to get the governor, get the mayor to do their jobs correctly as much as possible. So this is the chance. I mean, the people should know the congestion pricing, by the way, which is a big issue in New York. It was Biden's U.S. DOT that rubber-stamped it. Trump had held this off for about 4 years. President Biden came in. He rubber stamped it and allowed it to move forward. So all the things, again, that people are angry about in New York, brought to us by the Democratic Party, and they can be undone if we were to elect a Republican governor or a Republican president once again.
Well, let me before I move on to the next thing I want to talk to you about, let me give you an outsider's perspective on this, Congresswoman. I've been coming to New York on business since the early 1980s, and I watched how bad New York got before Giuliani got elected. And then I watched the renaissance of New York, and it was absolutely amazing what happened under Republican leadership under Giuliani. And when they got the squeegee bums gone and cleaned up the graffiti and cleaned up Times Square and started enforcing the law, and it made me feel completely safe to walk from my hotel to my favorite restaurant, and all the things that I did in New York that I wouldn't have done prior. That was wonderful, and New York became what I thought one of the safest, most enjoyable big cities in the world. And now I'm watching the slide again, and it breaks my heart.
Well, it breaks my heart because I'm a lifelong New Yorker. I love this city. I ran for mayor of this city against Bill de Blasio in 2017, and I warned that these things were going to happen. We were going to see the deterioration of quality of life. We were going to see the overtaxation of hardworking New Yorkers. We were going to see crime skyrocket. And you know what? I was called a fearmonger at that time, but everything I said has come true, and it's unfortunate.
You were a prophet.
And the only way we're going to fix it is if we stop electing these Democrats that are doing this to us. And that is, again, the message I go and tell my constituents. My constituents get it. My constituents get it. Staten Island and Southern Brooklyn, they're flipping these seats from blue to red, the local seats, and I give them credit. But we need the other people in New York City to recognize that, again, the things that they dislike, the things they are concerned about, have been brought to us by this mayor, this governor, and this president.
Nicole Malliotakis represents the 11th Congressional District of New York. In about the 2 minutes we have left, Congresswoman, let's move our attention to the House of Representatives and the fact that the GOP has this razor thin majority that I think is in jeopardy in the 2024 election. And there seems to be dissension and chaos in the GOP caucus.
Look, it's very concerning. We have a majority of one right now. And I think what we need to recognize as a conference is that we need to fight for the things, stick together and fight for the things we told the American people we would do. We can't control what happens in the Senate, but we can control what we have done. And quite frankly, all the issues that people have talked to us about, inflation and high energy costs and food costs, we tackled that with our domestic energy production legislation. Parents wanting a say in their children's education, they don't want their children being indoctrinated. We passed the Parents' Bill of Rights. We passed the strictest border security in history. We actually reversed the policies of President Biden, go back to many of the policies of President Trump, and of course, another bill, all these bills sitting on Senator Schumer's desk. Look, I was disappointed that the conference chose to send more money to Ukraine without demanding the border security. I thought that was the hill to die on. We needed to get that across the finish line because that's the number one issue, quite frankly, that's affecting my district. My people are just fed up in New York seeing what this mayor and this governor are doing. But what I will say is that we need to stick together as much as possible. It's hard when you have a majority of one because there's always one person who disagrees with the group. But we have to look at the bigger picture here, and that is that we need to keep the majority for the next 2 years. Why? Because the entire Trump tax code is going to be up. It's going to be reauthorized, or we're going to see Democrats take over and raise our taxes on the individual side, on the business side. They're going to destroy the economy. There's just too much at stake, and let's look at the bigger picture. Stick it together as much as we can. Let's keep sending these bills over to Schumer. If he doesn't want to pass them, he needs to explain to the American people why. But let's get these bills, continue to do what we're doing, and let's hope that we can grow this majority and that we get the White House so we can have more leverage. Because right now, two-thirds of the government run by Democrats. We're one-third, so it makes it difficult. If we can get at least two-thirds, then we're in business, and we'll be able to really make some serious differences.
Well, let's hope, because the alternative is just too frightening to think about. Congresswoman Nicole Malliotakis, thanks for being part of the program today, and have a great weekend.
And, great to be with you. Thank you very much.
And good luck to your fellow New Yorkers. Good luck to you in the election. Congresswoman Nicole Malliotakis, there she goes. Here we go. More of the show coming up after the break. I hope you'll stick around.
Critics are calling it the funniest show on the radio.
I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown. I amuse you.
This is Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
I almost had it.
It is Fox Across America. It is Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy. Jimmy will be back on Monday. We got a big show lined up for this Friday to wrap up the week after the top of the hour. Joe Concha, Fox News contributor, will join us. He has been monitoring the interview that Howard Stern at Sirius XM Channel 100 has been doing with President Biden. It's been happening during the time we've been on the air together here this in this first hour. So Joe Concha will join us right after the top of the hour to fill us in on that. Meanwhile, you know, we, as I said at the top of the hour, we know we're stuck on stupid, and a lot of it is headquartered right here in New York, casting no aspersions on good New Yorkers, but casting real aspersions on the stupidity that is breaking out across the across this great city. Representative Ilhan Omar from part of the squad, a Democrat from Minnesota. Her daughter goes to Columbia. She has weighed in and given us some of her wisdom on what's happening at Columbia and on college campuses. Here she is, cut 19.
So I actually met a lot of Jewish students that are in the encampment. And I think it is really unfortunate that people don't care about the fact that all Jewish kids should be kept safe and that we should not have to tolerate anti-Semitism or bigotry for all Jewish students, whether they are pro-genocide or anti-genocide.
Okay, you pro-genocide, did you hear that? She was doing pretty well up there until the last four words, pro-genocide or anti-genocide. Where are you on that, Congresswoman? Are you on the pro-genocide or anti-genocide side? Who do you know that is in part of polite society that is pro-genocide? I mean, you can't make this stuff up. And the anti-Semitism is intolerable. And the idea that you could even say, first of all, she knows what she's talking about, pro-genocide or anti-genocide. I guess she means that if you're pro-Israeli, you're pro-genocide, which is a complete canard. That's crazy. There was a ceasefire prior to October 7th. It was called October 6th, before Hamas invaded. Hey, more of the show's coming up after the top. Stay with us here on Fox Across America with Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla.
Live from everywhere USA, it's Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Hey, 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 it's hour two of a big Fox Across America for a Friday. Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla. Jimmy will be back on Monday. Meanwhile, it's me normally when I fill in from Texas, but right now I'm in the studio here in New York City where all kinds of crazy things are going on. Trump trial downtown. Uptown, we have Columbia University and the ongoing anti-Semitic, crazy, idiotic protests. And in Midtown, just almost literally feet from where I'm sitting, we had President Biden on the air with the Howard Stern Show on Sirius XM Channel 100. And our own Joe Concha, Fox News contributor, listened to that interview. Joe, welcome to the show.
Great to be with you, Paul. I don't think we met before, so great job so far.
We have not. Well, thank you for that. And you fill in frequently as well, so I feel like I'm part of a really cool club.
Yeah, the producing team's excellent. And being in radio these days, boy, is there ever a slow day? Never. It's
no,
always something to talk about.
Listen, I'm glad I'm not playing today's favorites and yesterday's or today's hits and yesterday's favorites. This is a fun kind of radio to do. So, speaking of radio, the Howard Stern Show, Sirius XM Channel 100. You monitored that interview. Tell us about it with Joe Biden.
Oh, man. I don't even know where to begin. It was just the most cringeworthy interview I think, ever heard outside of The View, right? Because that's what Howard Stern has become. He's become this – if you combine, like, Joy Behar and Rachel Maddow, out would pop, you know, the current version of Howard Stern. And I say this – Trust me, as somebody who loved Stern back in the 90s, particularly Private Parts is one of my favorite movies, something has happened to Donald Trump over the past, I don't know, 8 years, right around when Trump came along, Trump's his former friend, that he's just become this guy who hides in his home, fearing COVID, even in 2024, and is a complete Democratic activist at this point. So after being forced to listen to that interview, the only conclusion that I have apparently is that rock bottom has a basement, because this is the low point now for Howard Stern after a great career. And he allowed Paul Biden to tell lie after lie after lie while completely fawning over him. I mean, if I cringed any harder, I'd be a fossil. OK, I mean, for instance, here are my top three lies that Biden told during this. And he's told them before and they've been debunked, but no one bothers to tell this guy, hey, you know, maybe not tell that anymore because it isn't true. Or maybe just he forgets after he is told. First, Biden says he was arrested alongside a black family during the civil rights movement.
Let's play that. We have that cut. We're giving credit to Howard Stern show on Sirius XM Channel 100. Here he is, cut 29.
And I looked at my mom. I said, honey, you haven't said anything. She said, Joey, let me remember. True story. She said, remember when they were desegregating Linfield, the neighborhood, with 70 homes built at one suburbia? And I told you, and there was a black family moving in, and there was people who were down there protesting. I told you not to go down there, and you went down. Remember that? And you came, got arrested, be standing on the porch with a black family.
Right.
And they brought you back, the police. And I said, yeah, Mom, I remember that.
Okay, was that before or after he drove the 18-wheeler?
I think that was before,
okay. All right.
Because I think he was more of a teenager at this point.
Getting the timeline right here. So it's before he drove the 18-wheeler.
Right, and before he got arrested in South Africa.
Yeah, okay.
Mind you, a sitting senator for trying to visit Nelson Mandela. Right, so again, these things, I wrote a whole book about the guy, so I know these things quite well. Do you guys have the soundbite, this is my second favorite moment, of Biden saying that he rescued six people from drowning?
Don't have that, so tell us about it.
No, but basically, so Biden worked at a local pool, right, community pool.
Is that where he met the corn cereal, the breakfast
corn
cereal
pop.
Guy? Corn Pop, yeah, okay.
Corn Pop. Corn Pop existed, believe it or not, doing some research on that. He died a couple of years ago. The part that you're supposed to believe if we want to cover the Corn Pop story first is that Corn Pop apparently was wearing the wrong swimwear, like wasn't wearing a swimming cap at this pool where Biden was a lifeguard. And Biden went from being David Hasselhoff to basically Clint Eastwood and screamed at Corn Pop, who was the leader of a gang called the Romans, right? And it's not exactly the Bloods or the Crips, but they were called the Romans. And this Corn Pop gets up on the high dive, and Biden says, if you don't have the proper swimwear on, you get the hell out of here, I'll throw you out. Now, meanwhile, all the other gang members are in the pool playing, you know, Marco Polo. So they all hear this. They see their guy get completely dressed down by Biden. So then they're all waiting for him in the parking lot when he gets out. So Biden then apparently, this is according to Biden, of course, on his own biography, said that he walked up to Corn Pop, said that he apologized for calling out his swimwear, but wouldn't apologize for calling him Esther Williams, like something like that. It was like a half apology. And instead of this guy just shiving Biden, right, and just taking him out, apparently the guy goes, okay, we're good. Corn Pop said that and walked away. You're supposed to believe that happened, right? Now, this time around with Stern, he says that he saved six people from drowning in a community pool. Now, as somebody who's worked at a community pool, I can tell you that no one drowns in these things.
No,
it's not like it's a wave pool.
I hung out at the community pool. Nobody drowns.
That's what I said. Yeah nobody drowns.
Six people?
Six. He saved six
people. Who in their right mind is sending people to that pool then? Letting their kids go.
It's a pool. You know, I mean, you know how hard it is to drown in a pool? If a little kid falls in, I get it. Yeah, sure. But the parents probably right there. But, okay, even if he saved, like, one kid, you're telling me six?
Six.
I mean, it just doesn't happen. So I found that funny. Let's see. What was my favorite part of it? Oh, this was great. I'm sure you have a soundbite of this. I'm almost positive. You have that little soundbite where he says that he was sent salacious photos by women back in the
70s. Yeah, we do have
Please
that.
Play
Let's just play it. Cut 28.
Yes.
I got put in that 10 most eligible bachelor's list.
Because you were a United States senator. You were a catch.
Yeah. And so, and a lot of lovely women, but women would send very salacious pictures, and I just give them to the Secret Service. I thought somebody would think I was, and I just gave up.
When did senators start getting Secret Service protection?
Precisely. And Howard, who I thought was somewhat smart, you'd think he'd be like, but wait, he can even play dumb. Like, but the Secret Service doesn't have Secret Service protection, so how can you give him those photos? And by the way, was sexting around back in the 70s? Like, what were women doing?
What'd they do? Put him in a manila envelope and mail him? Because that's how you would have gotten them to him.
Take like a selfie on a Polaroid and then send it to his Senate office, I guess. Yeah, I mean, I could go on and on, but he trotted out the whole line again that Trump said if he loses, then there's going to be a bloodbath in the streets, which is not remotely what Trump said.
No, it's not.
Nope. Yet Howard saying, can you believe the Republican Party is now pro-Putin? No, just because Republicans want border security here in the U.S. and money allocated for that if instead of just going to Ukraine, maybe that doesn't make them pro-Putin. Right. So Howard was just as bad during all this because – again, I didn't expect like an old Mike Wallace 60 Minutes interview, but not one mention of inflation, really? Not one mention of the border or immigration illegal? No, it was mostly about abortion because, you know, Howard like roots for abortion. He's not even like pro-choice. He's more than pro-choice. He says that we should have more abortions in this country because, you know, we just don't seem to have enough.
No, Joe, he's a devout Catholic. He'll tell you.
I don't know if he says that, but that's Biden saying that. But yeah, I know.
Yeah,
I know. I don't know. What can I say? But Biden got a lot out of it because obviously, you know, he looks like a sympathetic figure, a nice, loving family man. And Trump, you know, was made to look horrible. But we all knew that going in. So I guess I shouldn't be too shocked by it. But it's just disappointing because, again, I was a Stern fan for a long time.
Well, we have one more short clip from, again, giving credit to the Howard Stern Show on Sirius XM. One more short clip on the subject of debating Trump. And here it is. Cut 27.
I don't know if you're going to debate your opponent.
I am somewhere. I don't know when. I'm happy to debate him.
Okay. Do you think he's going to debate Trump?
Can you believe that's actually news? Like, I got a breaking news alert on my phone from the New York Times saying, Biden says he'll debate. Well, yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, everybody else has done it.
Right, exactly. Do I think he'll debate? No, I don't. And ultimately, the excuse will be that Donald Trump is a fascist, an insurrectionist who tried to overthrow the very democracy that we embrace, and to normalize him by putting him on the same stage as this truth-telling, virtuous president is just not something that Joe Biden is willing to entertain at this point.
Yes, he simply wouldn't stoop to being up there. Yeah, I get that.
That'll be the argument.
That's
exactly.
We
know why.
No, we know why, because he reads the prompter, and where they have the quote, where they have the instruction to pause, he reads pause.
Reads pause. Oh, that was great. And that's the thing. He won't have a teleprompter during a debate, so he'll have to wing it. And we've seen what happens when you take this man out of a teleprompter. It's clean up on aisles 5, 14, 18, and 24. And this time you could say, well, in 2020 he did okay during the debates. Yeah, but now he has a record he has to defend. The only thing that could save him, I guess, is if somehow we're all stupid enough again to put a moderator up there from NBC News or who obviously is sympathetic towards Democrats. If it's a debate that sticks to the core issues that Americans care about most, which is inflation, which is crime, which is the border, and which is foreign policy, and particularly these two wars going on, if it sticks to that, then Biden's in big, big trouble. And Trump should really just give, like, short, concise answers and say, and I defer the rest of my time to the president. And then see how it goes.
Yeah, well,
that would go better.
Well, here's what bothers me, Joe, about this. Joe Concha is our guest here. Here's what bothers me. Given the fact that people, you know, ordinary, hardworking, middle-class Americans are having trouble making ends meet, let alone people who are poorer are really having trouble making ends meet. Given that crime is destroying once great American cities, given that we have, as you say, two wars going on, and the fear that maybe World War III erupts. I mean, given all that's going on, why isn't Trump up by 10 points?
He should be, absolutely. But there's a couple of reasons. Mitt Romney was right when he said before the 2012 election that 47% of the country is going to vote against me no matter what, right? And that's kind of where we are at this point. I don't think we're ever going to see like a Reagan type of landslide ever again as far as one person pulling away from another. I think just people vote against certain parties just by reflex, you know, not even based on issues that impact them most so much. So that's probably why. But if you took out Trump and all the baggage that he has, and a lot of it is unfair, and obviously these trials are all BS, but still,
let's be fair. Yeah. He does bring some of his own baggage.
I was about to say that. Yeah, I mean, you know, there are a lot of unforced errors. You know, put down the phone. We don't need to see this stuff anymore. Let's put it this way. This is what I was about to say. If you inserted Glenn Youngkin in as the Republican nominee against Biden, then I think he is up probably 8-9 points. And most definitely would win. With Trump, it's Trump's chances are better winning than losing if the election were held today at this point. But you're right. Given everything that's going on in the country right now, and not just the issues, but you have this 81-year-old president who we talked about does not have the mental acuity for this job. Republicans can't win this election. Dare I say I'll never see a Republican win another presidential election again, given who the opponent is and given the state of the country right now.
Well, and that said, that is true. And if we get 4 more years of Biden, we're going to get 3.5 years of Kamala Harris, I fear.
That's it. And then that's the thing that Trump should be hammering home. Don't say this guy's going to die. And this is why I think, you should vote for me. But you can more say, look, maybe Biden's going to hand the baton over to his female vice president to make history as the first female president, first woman of color president. And maybe Biden will just call it quits after he wins. And then think about President Kamala Harris and think about it the way China and Iran and Russia will look at a leader like that. That's why you should vote for me. And that's why I think Trump's VP choice is so important, because obviously that sets up 2028. I don't know who he's going to choose right now. I keep bouncing around from different people.
Well, who are you bouncing around on?
Nikki Haley is one, and people say, oh, no.
You got to defend that.
Yes. Ultimately, I think Trump wants to win. And you see these polls, like the last primary debate, Haley still got 16% of the vote, even though she's been out of the race for a month. So I think you bring her on, you have a better chance of winning. And then your vice president's kind of, you know, as far as when you're in office as president, is that person really too relevant in your life? No, probably not. How many times do you think Pence and Trump really spoke, right? So I Haley, if he wants to win. Youngkin, I think, is an excellent choice as well. He's a very popular governor in what is a blue state still. And I think he would bring kind of like a calming normalization to a Trump kind of campaign, you know. So I think he's a person you could see as president. And then I go to DeSantis, but in the end, I don't know. There was just so much bad blood during that primary that would be hard to, like, talk your way out of, like, all those things you said about Ron DeSantis being a groomer and, you know, Florida being a shutdown state during COVID, which it wasn't. That's almost too much to unpack. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Clearly it wasn't a shutdown state. It was actually the bright, shining beacon. Totally. During COVID. Absolutely.
Yeah, Georgia and Texas, too.
Mm-hmm. Which is why I was really amazed, and we got about 30 seconds left. I was really amazed that DeSantis, you know, every month that the campaign went on, he did worse and worse.
No one's going to beat Trump in a primary. Yeah. I can't even fault DeSantis that much. I just think he's an immovable object. He dominates media coverage, and he was a former president, has the brand name, and so on. So, yeah, no matter who the candidate was, I don't think Trump was going to be toppled.
But could you see President Ron DeSantis? Because I could.
Yeah, absolutely. I could see a President DeSantis or a President Youngkin who's my third choice? No, that's about it.
Okay,
for
two.
Now. I definitely don't see a President Kristi Noem, because she kills her dog, apparently, and that really just – I've never read a story and gotten so angry in my life. But that's a story for another time.
Yep, well, we will do it in another segment. Hey, listen, I enjoyed this segment. Thanks a lot, Joe, for being a part of the program.
Always fun, Paul. Thanks, man. Good to be here.
And have a great weekend. And listen, I think maybe what's going on with the crazy, maybe some people's eyes are getting opened, and maybe we'll start to restore some sanity. Let's hope. There, Joe Concha, there he goes. He went away before I was through talking to him. Joe Concha, he's gone. We're not. We'll be back after the break. You stay there.
You're riding around with America's cabbie.
Taxi! Taxi!
You're hanging out with Jimmy Failla on Fox Across America.
Okay, it is Fox Across America. Paul Gleicher sitting in for Jimmy Failla. All right, I've just been put on the spot by producer Mike Advensky to take the Fox News product called The Quiz. So, Mike, set us up here.
Yeah, sure, Paul. So it's going to be 5 questions, and let's just get right into it, right, so we can fit it in here. So you're ready for number one?
Okay, I'm up against who did it last week?
Todd Pyro. I believe he got 2 out of 5.
Okay, so I
got
to be 2 out of 5. Okay, let's go.
Let's go. What is the address of the White House? I won't even give you all the options.
1600 Pennsylvania
Avenue.
There
you go. Okay. All right, one for one, I assume. They don't tell you right away if you got it right.
Okay, I know that one's right.
Who are the members of the pop band, the Jonas Brothers?
Oh, God. Kevin.
Yep.
Joe and Nick.
Wow, look at you. Two for two. Okay.
Okay, is
Let's
that
keep
right?
Keep it going,
cool.
Yes.
All right.
What is the chemical formula for table salt?
Sodium chloride, NaCl.
NaCl, so you must be three for three. What compromise is attributed to the end of the Reconstruction era?
Compromise of 1877.
Okay. We got one more, Paul.
Okay.
Of the 13 major Chinese dynasties, what was the shortest?
Oh, God, I don't know.
I can give you the multiple choice options.
Okay, they're not going to make a difference. Go ahead.
All right. The Song Dynasty, the Han Dynasty, the Ming Dynasty, or the Qin Dynasty, or Qin. It's Q-I-N. I think I pronounced
it. Oh, inasmuch as I haven't heard of that last one, I'm going to go with it.
The Q-U-I-N.
Yeah.
Or Q-I-N.
Yeah.
You went 5 for 5.
Whoa!
Paul. Wow!
Whoa!
Wow! Might as well just end the show right here, right?
No, listen, I'm going to.
You're not going to get any better.
I'm going to LaGuardia and going home.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Really? So, okay, so I did 5 for 5 on the quiz.
5 for 5. I don't think anyone's gotten 5 for 5 yet. This is a hard quiz.
Well, so. The last one was just a pure guess, and the only reason I guessed it is because I never heard of it. The other three I'd heard of.
Well, sometimes that's what we do in school, right?
Oh, like it's exactly what I did in school. It's the only reason I got a diploma, if it weren't for guessing, particularly on the SAT. I remember when I went to take the SAT, the guy sitting next to me was copying from me, and I said they didn't tell the guy that they'd give us each different tests. So I let the guy copy. I said, have at it. He probably did better than I did.
Yeah, well, there you go.
So how do people take the quiz? How do people participate in the quiz?
So go to thequiz.fox. Just that, thequiz.fox.
That's fine.
No.com. Yeah.
Yeah. You can take the quiz. There's a little podcast associated with
Jimmy it. Jimmy Voice is one of them, I think. Yeah.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
All right, the quiz.
I think we have to bring this up with Taylor Riggs later that you went 5 for 5.
Yeah, I would absolutely going to bring it up. And listen, I want my trophy. I get a trophy. Paul Glaser sitting in for Jimmy Failla, Fox Across America. More is coming. Stay here. Hey, listen, we're going to have time for your calls here just in a few minutes at 888-788-9910. If you want to weigh in on what we've been talking about for the first half of the show. But meanwhile, I'm delighted to welcome as a guest Jonathan Turley, GW University law professor, constitutional law expert, and a Fox News contributor. If we're going to talk about the Trump prosecution, there's nobody I'd rather be talking to than you, Jonathan. So thanks for being a part of the program. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Listen, I have some real lawyer kind of questions. I'm not a lawyer, but here's just one that just pops into my head. The gag order. Anybody can say anything they want to about Donald Trump. Donald Trump has got a ball gag in his mouth. Why not an interlocutory appeal on that?
Yeah, it's one of those things that is very difficult to appeal. They've tried to do so. The Court of Appeals tend to defer, as in this case, to the judge. Where I think this judge is just dead wrong is including Michael Cohen in that order. It's absolutely absurd. You know, you have someone who is actively campaigning against the president as well as has been actively discussing his testimony, the case, and the president's alleged guilt. This judge is being stubborn. He was wrong. And it's bad enough that he's putting the pedal to the metal to try this before the election. That only sort of magnifies the problems.
Well, let me ask you this with respect to appeals. Why not an interlocutory appeal as to jurisdiction? Because now that we've revealed the crime, and it seems to be a federal purview, why is it in a state court in Manhattan?
Well, that's a really good question. The problem is that the judge here seems to be ignoring the fact that there isn't an actual crime. It is by no means established, and I think the evidence heavily weighs against any federal election crime in this case. The Justice Department itself declined to prosecute. They had the full record in front of them, including Pecker's testimony, and they didn't even seek a civil fine against Trump or his campaign. The problem is the New York law. It's the same problem that we saw with the James effort that got this really grotesque $500 million judgment against Trump. These New York laws are written in such an ambiguous way that judges are hard put to dismiss them because most anything would satisfy them. I mean, Bragg is alleging that Trump conspired to promote his own election. Well,
yeah, okay,
he was running for election. But even if you look at this indictment on its face, in my view, the judge should have thrown this case out. I mean, putting aside the fact that they zapped two dead misdemeanors into life, putting aside the fact that there is no federal crime here that is allegedly being covered up, they're saying that he used the wrong legal description for this money in order to influence the election. But that didn't happen until after he was elected. So it's everything about this case seems to be out of like a Saturday Night Live skit. I mean, it none of it makes sense.
Well, so then you can't predict the future, but let's try. How does it play out?
Well, no one seriously expects a New York jury is going to acquit the president. I think it would be wonderful if they did. No one expects this judge to wake up and say, wow, this is an incredible abuse of the legal system. What the most one can hope for, realistically, is a hung jury. And I'm still hopeful they will do that. I'm not willing to write off all these jurors. In fact, if they all acquitted, I would be delighted. And I think they could bring some integrity back to the city's legal system.
Well, what about the two lawyers that are on the jury? Wouldn't one of them say this is wrong?
Well, I have always opposed lawyers on juries.
Yeah,
I think it is a uniquely bad idea. And I think that this, I would certainly have opposed them being on this jury. It's not saying anything about these two lawyers. But this is a case that's collapsing on its own weight. There's no crime here. What I'm worried is that you're going to have a minority of jurors who are going to say something very unpopular in there. They're going to actually say that Donald Trump just might be innocent in a New York jury room. That's not easy. And if you've got two attorneys that then say, oh, no, I think that, you know, this is a crime and this is a valid indictment, it'll be very difficult for jurors to stand their ground. They get a lot more weight with jurors, and even when they're instructed not to. So I think it's a bad thing for this jury. I think it's a bad thing generally.
So he'll take a criminal conviction prior to the election. He'll be a convicted felon. Is this judge going to try to put him in jail?
Well, I'm by no means assuming a conviction just because I'm hoping that there are some New Yorkers on this jury that just say this is an embarrassment. I mean, it started
out with Tucker,
who just fell apart. But if he's convicted, there's no reason for Manchin to send him to jail. He's a first offender, and it would be, in my view, just absurd to do that. But
it might be a bridge too far. It might actually blow up in their face.
It might, but yet, look, I've been surprised with this judge. I think that the judge has lost a lot of opportunities to bring fairness to this trial. And I think just today, I think I've seen more things that worry me. I mean, the fact that the prosecution is being allowed to continually refer to Pecker pleading guilty to an election offense, in my view, is just entirely prejudicial because there is no election offense. The fact that they got Pecker to do that just shows that Pecker has really bad lawyers. But this is not there was no federal offense here. Now, I can understand that it's sometimes easier just to plead to it and then you don't have to spend the money. But that judge is allowing that jury to believe that there is an actual crime here under the federal law.
Well, I think it's shocking that we would try a former president just at all, particularly on such a thin pretense of a crime. And I am choosing to be optimistic that somehow in the end all of this will work out because it's just awful.
I think it is awful, and it's terrible for the legal system. I think the New York legal system has suffered more in the last year in terms of its integrity and credibility than any time in its history. Between James and Bragg, they have eradicated any credibility in the civil and criminal legal system in New York. Most people now look at New York and they say, but for the grace of God, go I. no one would want to be pulled into that vortex.
And contributing to more and more people with the means and the inclination to do so to leave New York, which is in the end not good. Hey, Jonathan Turley, you took time for us here, and I really appreciate it. I know you're sitting there with other things to do, so thank you for taking the time to be a part of the program.
Thanks for having me.
Jonathan Turley, GW Law University professor, law expert, and the guy you want to talk to when you're talking about this idiotic trial against Donald Trump here on Fox Across America. Paul Gleiser sitting in. Listen, what do you think about all of this? Love to hear from you. When I do the show for Jimmy, I love to take calls. I'd love to hear from you at 888-788-9910. I'm going to choose, as I said at the start of the program, I am going to choose to have optimism for our country. I think things are getting bad enough and crazy enough that ordinary people who are generally only casually engaged, if engaged at all, are becoming more engaged. And they're starting to look at things and saying, well, wait a minute, that's not right. What sane parent who loves his daughter or loves his son would send that son or daughter to a place like Columbia University or USC or any of these places where these horrible anti-Semitic protests are taking place with, in many cases, the support of the faculty, where college professors that are supposed to be teaching the next generation of leaders how to lead, actually in support of naked, just blatant anti-Semitism? Why would you send your kid to that school? And parents are starting to ask the question. First of all, why would you spend $90,000 a year to send anybody to school? If the deal is, well, you get the credential from the elite university, does that really mean what it used to? One of the things that I think is going to happen, it's already seen signs of it, given how badly the presidents of Harvard and MIT and Yale fumbled the ball during congressional testimony earlier this year. A Harvard degree, a Yale degree, an Ivy League degree doesn't mean what it used to mean. It's not a proxy for future high achievement that it used to be. So why would you send your kid to those schools? Know what you're buying. Take a look at what is really going on before you, the money that you saved for a lifetime, you pour into a place like that. It's the only way you get their attention. It's the only way you want to get somebody's attention. Hit them in the pocketbook. Stop giving to universities that don't reflect your values. Don't just reflexively continue to give money to your alma mater if your alma mater has turned into something that you don't recognize. And don't send your kid there. And with respect to justice, I continue to believe that Americans are fundamentally fair people. And whether you like Donald Trump or not, whether you like somebody or not, what Americans generally don't want is to see somebody unfairly treated. That, you know, the people in the heartland of this country, people that make the country go, they don't like blatant unfairness. And what is being done to Donald Trump with respect to the prosecutions being brought against him, blatantly unfair. Why do I say that? Because if the last name of the defendant weren't Trump, the case wouldn't be filed. And if the last name of the defendant weren't Trump running for president, the case wouldn't be filed. If Trump had lost in 2020 and simply retired and gone back to his real estate empire and faded into the sunset, he would not be being prosecuted today. So that tells you everything you need to know about the four prosecutions that are pending against him. This one that's happening right now, as we speak, right here on the island of Manhattan, it wouldn't be happening. And the fact that that is true tells you that it's unfair, and people are starting to notice. And we've already seen, with respect to all of these prosecutions, these indictments, every time they indicted Trump, his poll numbers went up. So it's starting to pretty good evidence blowing up in their faces, the people persecuting Trump. And why not? Here's a crazy idea. If Trump is so bad, if Donald Trump is so patently a bad person and so patently unfit to be the president of the United States, why not decide that at the ballot box? Why, if he is so bad, it will be self-evident. And why don't you trust the American people to choose accordingly if he is so obviously so terrible? That does not put me in the tank for Donald Trump. I have expressed right here on this show some of the reservations that I have about Donald Trump. He brings some of his own baggage to the table. He creates some of his own problems. He, in to a certain extent, some of the woes he's suffering today are self-inflicted. But I will tell you this. Trump's policies in his 4 years as president were vastly better for average, ordinary working people than what we have now. People of ordinary means who aspire to prosperity in the middle class were better off in the 4 years under Donald Trump. People who are not yet in the middle class who want to be, who have that aspiration, were on that path during the 4 years of Donald Trump. We had better income growth, real income growth among the poor, among minorities, among blacks and Hispanics. They did better under Donald Trump than in any president before Donald Trump. So there's a lot to recommend Donald Trump, the president, Donald Trump, the policy guy. So get past your personal animosity toward him, if you have that, and look at what the man promoted when he was in office, and look at the policy he pursued. If nothing else, look at the southern border, or walk down the street not far from where I'm sitting to the Roosevelt Hotel and see what's going on there when you have millions of illegals flooding into the country that need some place to sleep and some place to be taken care of medically and food to eat. And that's all on the backs of people who are already struggling to make ends meet. That's where you make your judgment of Donald Trump versus Joe Biden, not in a courtroom. That's not where to do it. It does not belong in the courtroom. It belongs at the ballot box. That's what I think. What about you, 888-788-9910? It's Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla here on Fox Across America.
The show not afraid to call out both sides of the aisle.
He's the other side's worst nightmare.
This is Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla here on Fox Across America. And I am taking your calls, and we're in Nevada, Las Vegas, Nev. Al, you're up on Fox Across America. What say you?
Hey, you know what? Thank you for taking my call. And I just wanted to share something about everything you said about Trump's agenda is correct. You know, economic responsibility, minorities are doing great. But the thing is that, you know, I'm actually running for office out here, and I'm knocking on doors, and women are telling me the following, is that they felt that under the Trump that women are not being respected as they once were. You know, mom and apple pie was always a big thing, a part of, you know, the American dream. You know, moms are like, you know, number one. And, you know, Trump is like the image people get from – the women get from Trump is that you got to have high heels and Botox and you're kind of like a sex object. And, you know, moms – a lot of women just want to be moms.
Okay.
You know, they will grow, hey, I just want to be a mom, and they don't feel that's getting heard.
Okay.
That's what I wanted to say.
Okay, well, let's explore that a little bit. I know, because in my own experience, running in my own circles, women in my circles – there's some that just really can't stand the guy. I mean, it goes back to the Billy Bush tape and the locker room talk. Fine. I get it why you don't like that. I understand it. But, you know, he's defending himself in a trial that has at its roots a porn star. So I get why they don't like it. But here's my question. Would you rather have runaway inflation, the border being flooded with millions of social services needing crime-committing illegal immigrants? Would you rather have wars breaking out around the world? Would you rather have runaway federal spending and increased taxes? Because that's what you're going to get.
No, I get you. I hear what you're saying. I'm not saying that it's a deal-breaker. I'm saying that Trump ought to change his message to incorporate women more and add that and maybe apologize and say, hey, maybe, you know, some guys like those kind of women, but let's not forget that it's mom and apple pie who are the backbone of America, and we can have that too. I'm not saying it's an either or. I'm not saying don't vote for Trump because of that. I'm saying that Trump ought to change his message. That's what I'm trying to get.
Listen,
and the people that are advocating Trump.
He ought to smooth off the edges. And I've said this going all the way back to when he announced that he was going to run. I've said this, and I've taken some incoming fire over it from people that listen to me at my local station in Texas there's strong Trump supporters. But I'll stand by it. He is an imperfect candidate, but he is by far better than the guy on the other side. And as a consequence, now that he's the nominee, he's the presumptive nominee, I'm going to be four square for him. But, Al, you're giving him good advice, and I hope somehow he manages to take a little bit of it because we can't afford to lose any votes. Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla here on Fox Across America. Third hour's coming up.
Live from Everywhere USA, it's Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Hey, 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 it's hour three of Fox Across America. Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla. Listen, one more invitation for you to follow me in my weekly column, YouTellMeTexas.com. I say it's You Tell Me Texas because it comes from Texas. You can be from anywhere to tell me. I say what's on my mind, then you say what's on yours. It's a two-way street, YouTellMeTexas.com. Jimmy will be back on Monday, but it's one more hour of me sitting in for Jimmy here on Fox Across America. And in the studio, rather than remote, I finally get to meet face-to-face Taylor Riggs of the Fox Business Network. Taylor, thanks for coming up.
Thanks for having me back. So fun to be here in person
with
you.
Oh, it's fun talking to you on the radio.
You're actually real.
I am real.
At first, I was like, are you an AI robot? But now I know that you're real.
No. This is it. This is as good as it gets.
Live in the flesh.
Yeah, not so much, but this is all I got. Hey, listen, so you're on the Fox Business Network. You talk business. We talk, presidential administrations are all about what impact they have on the economy. Joe Biden is promising, as if he thinks it's a good campaign strategy, to let the Trump tax cuts expire. It's like, oh, I know, here's a great idea. People already having trouble making ends meet. Let's raise their taxes.
So here's my biggest problem with it is it's effectively a lie to the American people. He campaigned on, I will not raise taxes on people making less than $400,000. But if you let the Trump tax cuts expire, you are effectively raising taxes on everyone, including people who are making less than $400,000. So he won't frame it that way. He'll say, oh, I just let the cuts expire. But effectively, people under that income bracket will be paying more. I brought some data for you. If you're a married filer and you have two kids making $85,000 a year, you will now be paying an additional almost $1,700. You're a married filer. You have three kids. You're making about $200,000 a year. You're going to be paying an additional $7,500 a year at a time when people still feel very pinched by inflation and the cost of everything else is going up.
Yeah, and plus, while that's going on, they're going to be trying to force us into electric cars that we can't afford.
Exactly. So we heard from Tesla, Ford, GM all this week. Tesla's trying to continue to come out with a low-cost model, get it under $50,000, under $30,000. GM and Ford are in a really interesting spot. I know we like to chat about EVs a lot on the show with you. Trying to make it affordable through government subsidies to come out with EVs. The consumer has said, no, thank you. I'm not interested in an EV right now. At best, I'm interested in a hybrid. Ford is losing something like $160,000 on every EV it makes. They're finally pivoting and saying, thank goodness for an SUV and a normal gas engine because we can make money on that. So we heard from all the car makers this week, and you're right. I mean, costs of everything are just going up. They're trying to come out with a low-cost EV, but frankly, the economics don't work right now for that.
First of all, for some of us, you know, the logistics don't work out. If you have a long commute, if you live semi-rural, if you've got there's a whole lot of reasons you may not want an EV. You know what? And if you want an EV, God bless you. One of my wife and I, we socialized with a couple. He's a radiologist and she's a college professor, and he drives a Tesla. It's a gorgeous car, my
great,
God. Gorgeous
beautiful.
Car. But you know what? He picked that of his own free will. Nobody forced him into it. By the
correct.
Way, you and I helped pay for it to the tune of $7,500.
Yep.
But it's his choice. Fine, I want it to be my choice. But getting back to the broader subject of the overall economy, I'm going to play you two cuts here, Taylor.
Okay.
The first is Joe Biden in Syracuse, where he's bragging about the state of the economy. It's cut 23.
We have the strongest economy in the world. And that's a fact. 15 million new jobs created in 3.5 years. Unemployment hasn't been this low for this long for 50 years. Wages are rising. Instead of importing foreign products, we're exporting and exporting American jobs. We're exporting American products and creating American jobs. Here in America, where they belong.
Okay, that's Joe Biden bragging about all of his wonderful economy. Here is Charles Payne, your colleague. Fox Business Network. Here is his counterpoint to that. Cut 24.
President Biden can't have it both ways. You can't tell the world we're the best economy ever without acknowledging it's happening under Donald Trump's taxes. Would you assume that the same vibrancy that he says America has would exist if we shot taxes higher? Lawrence, let me just read one thing real quick. The Hill, this is from The Hill, 2021. Not really big Donald Trump fans, right? Our IRS data proves Trump tax cuts benefited middle working class Americans most. So if you unwind that, guess who is going to hurt the most?
Well, there it is.
The war on the middle class.
Well, yeah, and Taylor, the middle classes gets me into my great sermon. You know, a lot of the tension that we are dealing with in America today,
yes,
and a lot of the political division and a lot of the polarization would self-eradicate to the extent that more and more people move into the middle class.
Exactly. Bingo. You have to help the middle class and not raise taxes on them or let the tax cuts expire because you want to have a good political talking point. You talked a lot about taxes and then you played Charles Payne. I want to go off on a little bit of a tangent, but it's relevant here.
Okay.
So bear with me.
All right.
When we talk in business about the stock market, that is supposed to be the great equalizer, right? Everyone can get invested in the stock market. Anyone. It only takes a dollar. Invest in the American economy. Watch the market go up, and that's how you create generational wealth. Long-term wealth, you're invested in the market,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
These new tax proposals, they want to make the top marginal tax rate on long-term capital gains. So what that is when I sell this stock and it's higher than where I bought it.
Asset you've held for more than a year, which is how they define long-term.
Then you pay taxes on that gain.
A cap gain rather than ordinary income.
They want to tax that at 45%.
Oh.
They also have a proposed 25% tax on unrealized capital gains tax. Now, that's for high net worth individuals. And these are some of the top rates. But I think what irks me is investing in the market, investing in America, getting financial literacy, creating investments for your 401k, generational wealth to help us all move up into that middle class should be celebrated. And when you're taxing that, a tax is discouraging behavior, right?
Yes.
We're taxing you because we
want you to. We raise taxes on cigarettes so people won't smoke.
Exactly. So that you change your behavior.
Right.
So they don't want me invested as a middle class person in the equity market.
Well, let me give you a personal story on that. I wouldn't be sitting here if it weren't for the investment of a wealthy individual who helped me get started buying my first radio station.
Interesting.
I wouldn't be sitting here today. I would not be a Fox Radio affiliate. I wouldn't own radio stations in Texas that give me the entree to be sitting here in the studio with you. And this is because a guy who had made a lot of money, I'm not going to say his name, but his last name is famous, but he put up some money so that I could I'd have the money I needed. I didn't have enough of it of my own to get started. He did that on the assumption that the money, that the gain that he hoped to get, the money that he hoped to make for risking his money, would be taxed at a capital gains rate, and it was lower than the ordinary income rate.
Exactly.
To the extent that you raise taxes, you discourage that kind of investment.
Exactly.
And then you end up, guys that are trying to go out and start something and make something happen and be a part of the American economy and take a risk and in the end employ people, as I do, mm-hmm, would not be doing that. So you are taxing the very lifeblood, the nutrition of the American economy, you were taking away by raising taxes like that. But Taylor, too many people don't understand that. They think, well, get those rich guys.
Right, right.
What do rich guys do with their money?
Right. my favorite one is the tax on unrealized capital gains.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about this.
Yeah.
So when I have, let's say I buy a share of Apple.
Okay.
And the share of Apple goes up.
You bought it for $100 and it goes to $200.
Amazing, right?
Okay, okay.
But I don't sell it. I'm just sitting
in it.
You're
just sitting on $200 worth
of
stock.
They want to tax that even when I have not sold it.
So then where are you supposed to get the money?
You tell me. What happens if the stock goes to zero?
Yeah.
Do I get a refund?
No.
So all sorts of, I am all for, I will willingly pay taxes if I know that it's going to the right cause. That the government isn't wasteful with my money.
Right.
That we can use it to improve a road, a bridge, a school, a water system.
Pay police officers.
Bingo.
You know, keep, as you say, keep the roads, the potholes filled, to keep the bridges from collapsing. That's all money we need to spend.
But there's not enough money in the world to tax people out of, to keep up with the massive wasteful spending that is going on right now. Don't get me started on the debt and the deficit. But, I mean, some of these tax policies, taxing unrealized gains, that I just don't even know how that's realistic.
Well, so if you haven't realized the gain, where do you get the cash to pay the tax?
I don't know. And, again, I think a lot of people at home are, and I've talked about this analogy with you before, you tell me I have to pay my credit card bill on time. Mm-hmm. I have to pay my property taxes, my mortgage on time. Mm-hmm. If I don't, someone's coming for me.
Right.
But I live in a country now where we think that spending is unlimited and the country doesn't have to balance its budget. So then why do I? You know, where is sort of that overall fiscal responsibility?
Right.
And
right.
I think that that gets to the heart of what I think many Americans feel angry about, is we're all trying to pinch pennies. Joe Biden in that clip also talked about wages are going up, but real wages, which is wages adjusted after inflation,
are not going up
because all of this spending in this administration has spurred inflation, which means that actually after tax and after inflation, I've lost money. And again, so all of these nuances, they're good talking points, but when you dig down deep into them, that's where the middle class is angry and the middle class is eroding.
Well, we said here at the start of the conversation, Taylor Riggs, Fox Business Network, with us here on Fox Across America. We talked about the middle class. The middle class, I'm proud to say, is an American invention. On the day that America went into business under the Constitution, March the 3rd, 1789, the poverty rate in the most powerful nation in the world, Great Britain, at the time, the poverty rate exceeded 70%.
Oof.
Okay. Poverty was the norm.
Mm-hmm.
It was the American system that made poverty the exception rather than the rule. And it is the American middle class that brought that about. The middle class is the great thing that made the country as wealthy and as prosperous and as attractive as it is to people from around the world. And what we want to encourage is people moving into the middle class.
Yes.
We want to get people off of welfare. We want to get them off of dependency. And we want to make it clear that the middle class is attainable by you. You may not, most of us will never be Elon Musk.
Nope.
But we can get in the middle class and live a life that goes beyond just having enough to survive every day.
Right. Some of that we could argue, and I'll sort of wrap up my thoughts with this, is I was told growing up home ownership was a way of achieving that American
dream
of getting into the middle class. We've all had parents who sold their homes more than what they bought it for,
right?
20, 30 years ago. The problem is home affordability, I would argue, is almost at a crisis level.
It is.
So some of it.
Ask my 24-year-old daughter who's worked. She's got a professional job. She has a master's degree. She works for a big accounting firm, one of the big four, making real good money, and she can't afford a house.
And monthly payments, some of them is because interest rates are high, because the spending, which leads to inflation, which means you have to keep interest rates high.
Right.
Some of it is just home prices in general have gone up.
Because of inflation.
Because of inflation. So your monthly payment is now up 13% year over year. On average, it's almost $3,000. The record median home price just came in at a record $384,000. The 30-year fixed mortgage rate just crossed 7.1%, the first time it crossed 7% this year. Don't tell me that things are more affordable than they are today. That is the middle class who now cannot afford a home.
Okay, and so the policy of Joe Biden is, I know how we'll fix it. We'll raise everybody's taxes.
Doesn't work.
Doesn't work. Hey, Taylor Riggs, it's always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
It's just,
and I'm glad that you're not an AI robot. You're real.
No, I'm actually real. I think my wife would be happy sometimes on AI robot. She could go type in some code and I'd disappear. Yeah, disappear. Yeah. Yeah. She's found out that the mute button on the remote doesn't work on me. Hey, Taylor, thanks a lot for being a part of the program. Hope you have a great weekend.
You too. Happy Friday.
Okay, there she goes, Taylor Riggs. Here we go. More of the show coming up after the break. Stay with us.
It's the show that never hits the books.
I love the poorly educated.
You're listening to Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Fox Across America, Paul Glaser sitting in for Jimmy Failla. Speaking of the devil, here he is. Jimmy, yo, what's happening?
Yo, hello from the D.C. swamp, Paul.
I said, where the hell are you? Why am I sitting here and not you?
I know, how about it? I'm going to send you the funniest video in the world. I was just legit on the front lawn of the White House watching Marine One land. We were there to interview Peter Doocy as part of the Saturday Night Show.
Yeah.
But then they asked us to stick around and help carry Biden across the front lawn. So, he is our commander in chief. You grab a hand, I'll grab a foot.
Yeah.
And he made it in the door safely without incident.
Well, good for you. Nice of you to serve your country in that way.
Thank you for your service. You're welcome. So we're down in the swamp. We are filming like little footage that we use on the show tonight. Like me and Doocy had a talk. Then we wandered the White House grounds. Only got tased once by the Secret Service.
Good.
So that's good.
That's good.
Yeah, it's not so bad. You usually get more than that on Craigslist alone. But yeah, it was good. And it's nice, sunny. So it's a pretty cool vibe. And knowing we were from Fox News, the Secret Service greeted us with a laser pointer. That was nice. Made us feel at home. But here we are.
And you know, the White House Correspondents' Dinner, Doocy brings to mind, the whole White House press room. You got the New York Times ragging on Joe Biden about the fact that he never takes questions, won't give them any access. The New York Times is ragging on him.
Yes, and they're ragging on him because they don't want to keep covering the Hamas protests. That's what it is.
Okay, that's like, true.
Yes, he's not giving them access, but at the same time, all of their kids go to Columbia. They're like, hey, man, can you give us some other ink? We can't just keep writing about this. We're in a bad spot. But it does tell you something. And I was speaking to Peter Doocy earlier about this. He said there is like a general frustration because they have no access. You know, it's one thing to have limited access, but there's no access. And, if you look at the numbers comparative to him and other presidents in terms of press conferences, obviously they're infinitesimally lower, to use a vocabulary word that's way too big for a man of my
No, you said, listen, I saw you struggle with that. That was.
I read it right off of Google, actually.
That was tough for you. Yeah, you contrast that with Trump. He used to stop and talk to the media every time he was going to Marine One, every time he was walking back into the White House from Marine One. He had gave more access to the media than any president in my adult life.
Listen, when you think of that, they were calling them heliconferences because the helicopter would be running and he'd stop to talk to reporters. It's a fun fact. People don't know this. Trump went through more helicopter fuel because of those press conferences than any president in history did from actually flying around the country.
All right, we got 20 seconds left. What's on the big show on Saturday night this weekend?
Ooh, everybody at Fox News, a lot of Hollywood A-list stars, and an open bar. So what's on the docket? Probably the end of my career. See everybody at 9.
Okay, well, we will see you back here on Monday in the very chair I'm occupying. Thanks for letting me fill in, man.
It's an honor to get booked on a show like this. Thank you.
Last half hour's coming up. Stay with us. Home stretch, Fox Across America. Paul Glaser sitting in for Jimmy Failla. If you want to weigh in on what we've been talking about for the first 2.5 hours, love to hear from you. 888-788-9910. 888-788-9910. You ought to put that in your phone so you have it handy. Thought comes to your head when you're listening to Jimmy or when I'm filling in, 888-788-9910. I was talking with Taylor Riggs in the prior segment of Taylor Riggs of the Fox Business Network here at Fox News headquarters in New York. And we were talking about the importance of the American middle class. So much of what Democrats and far-left liberals want to do, though they say it's aimed at the rich, though they say it's aimed at getting the rich to pay their fair share, what they don't understand or choose to ignore for their own political purposes is when you hurt the when you go after the rich, when you enact tax increases, when you do things that you think are aimed at the rich, you are in fact hurting the middle class. For example, as Taylor was talking about, if you're talking about taxing capital gains at high rates, the picture they paint is Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos making a killing in the market and making tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in their stock holdings, and they ought to pay their fair share of that. They ought to pay the taxes on that. What they fail to recognize is most of the stock in the country is held by ordinary working Americans via their retirement plans. And when you raise taxes on capital gains, you are hurting the equity markets that people are counting on in order to grow their wealth sufficient to the point that they have enough money to live on during retirement. And you are hurting the middle class. And this is the economic illiteracy that plagues our country. They don't understand, people don't understand how capital works. And as a consequence of that, they are willing to buy off on policies because they think only rich people are going to pay it. And here's the other thing, and this you can do, you yourself can do this. You can check me out on this. Go to irs.gov, and there's all kinds of resources there, irs.gov. Go there and find the table that shows who pays taxes. It will show you in percentages of how many tax returns are above this threshold, how many above the second quintile, third quintile, fourth quintile. What you will find out is the if you taxed the top 10% of earners in the United States at the rate of 100%, you would not make a dent in the deficits this country is running. So the idea that we can solve all of our problems via taxation of the rich is simply not true. You can go to the IRS's data and see it for yourself. And that's why you got to dig in and you got to understand what the libs are saying to you when they talk about taxing the rich. 888-788-9910. Hey, on the line with us, always a good hang, former Arizona Attorney General Mark Brnovich. Mark, thanks for being part of the program.
Thank you, Paul, for having me on.
Listen, you know, we've started the show. I led off the show talking about I'm sitting here in the epicenter of crazy because downtown we have the Trump being tried for what I cannot for the life of me find a crime. So he's on trial, one of four trials that he faces for the crime of having been president of the United States. We have uptown, we have at Columbia University, the protest, the anti-Israel, anti-Semitic protest. And here in the middle of the town, we had Joe Biden on the Howard Stern show on Sirius XM earlier talking about the great economy he's in charge of. Let's take one of those. Let's take downtown and the and the prosecution/persecution of Donald Trump.
Well, I will tell you something, Paul. I am a former federal prosecutor. I was a state gang prosecutor, and obviously I was the former attorney general of the great state of Arizona. So I've handled literally thousands of criminal cases during the course of my career. And I keep trying to tell folks, even the people I know on the left side of the aisle or independents, that this Trump derangement syndrome, this wanting to get Trump or Donald Trump at any cost, is really, really dangerous for this country. And if you look at what I call the three T's, in any criminal case, you look at the type of case it is, the timing of the case, and the treatment of the individual. What is happening not only in New York but with the special counsel fails all those tests. I mean, when we talk about the type of crimes, you're talking about unprecedented prosecutions. You're talking about legal theories that they can't explain in 30 seconds or less. You're talking about people being prosecuted for what seemingly is a federal crime in state court. And then you look at the timing of this. Why you have a leading candidate running for the nation's, maybe the world's, highest office having to deal with multiple legal actions, criminal cases where someone's life is in jeopardy or their freedom is in jeopardy. The timing of this obviously is terrible, especially when you consider
the nature of when these alleged acts happened. And then you look at the treatment. You ask yourself, would any other individual, anybody accused of a crime, be treated this way? And I will tell you, in all of my years as a prosecutor and talking to all of the prosecutors and even judges I know, none of us can ever remember a time when an individual defendant, that is someone accused of a crime, has been ordered to appear every single day for every single motion, for jury selection, for everything else. It's really unheard of. And even the gag order, how it's applying to one party and not other individuals in the case, it's really unprecedented. And I think that the American public, if they're being honest, and even if they don't like Donald Trump, they have to recognize and realize that what is going on is dangerous for this country. And I think that's one of the things even the U.S. Supreme Court recognized during yesterday's oral argument, that putting Trump aside, these precedents that are being set are really what happens in the third world. They're what happens in communist or fascist countries where the people in power persecute and go after their opposition. And, you know, so I think the court is especially the appellate courts, the Supreme Court, are going to be very sympathetic to these appeals, because you can't treat Donald Trump differently just because a lot of people don't like him, or just because a lot of people don't like him or don't want him to be the next president.
Well, let me play you some. Mark Brnovich, former Arizona Attorney General, is with us. Toward the point you just made, let me play you some audio from Justice Samuel Alito talking to the very point you just made. It's cut 11.
If an incumbent who loses a very close, hotly contested election knows that a real possibility after leaving office is not that the president is going to be able to go off into a peaceful retirement, but that the president may be criminally prosecuted by a bitter political opponent, will that not lead us into a cycle that destabilizes the functioning of our country as a democracy? And we can look around the world and find countries where we have seen this process, where the loser gets thrown in jail.
What say you?
Well, obviously, I agree with Justice Alito in his line of questioning. And maybe more importantly, I thought there was a line of questioning yesterday, and I believe it was Justice Gorsuch, that asked a line of questioning related to the theory of, the special prosecutor's theory, and how the fact that, like, well, there's a certain amount of immunity unless you're engaged in criminal conduct. And essentially the argument from DOJ is that, well, a president or a former president shouldn't be prosecuted. However, if a prosecutor is able to get an indictment, that shows that what he did was unlawful, and therefore they can prosecute him. Or maybe it was Justice Roberts that asked that line of questioning. But the whole point is that, you know, once again, that's a dangerous precedent. And amongst prosecutors, you know, there's been a running joke for decades. I didn't come up with it, but prosecutors, the old joke, the old saw is you could indict a ham sandwich. I'm not aware of all my years as a prosecutor that when you couldn't get an indictment. And that's why I always tell people, and when I was running even for AG, people thought it was corny, but I used to talk about the fact that when you're the government, you can take away people's livelihoods, someone's life, liberty, property. It's an awesome responsibility. You don't just throw stuff against the wall and see what sticks. Because even now, what's happening in New York, I don't think that case will ever be upheld on appeal for multiple reasons, you know, including statute of limitations problems. You know, it's essentially a federal crime. And
you say jurisdictional problems.
Yeah, there's so many issues, even the way the jury selection was handled and, like, some of the evidence is coming in. But, you know, I'll tell you what, I think that the trial is becoming a bigger farce every day, and I'm really pretty sure that no one has ever believed anything or read the National Enquirer since the 1980s. I mean, so, you know, you're talking about people like Michael Cohen who have zero credibility. You're talking about the National Enquirer. And it's all kind of seedy and gossipy, and I just, like I said, as a former prosecutor, I just sit there and I say, this clearly seems designed to harass and take up 6 weeks of the president's time, probably put him in a lot of stress, because who wouldn't be stressed if they're facing, you know, 20 years in prison? And it's just so in a lot of ways un-American. And I just keep trying to tell people I know there's people, especially in Arizona, we're a swing state. I know people that don't like Donald Trump and will never vote for him. But I tell them the ends cannot justify the means. And if you don't like Donald Trump, we in America settle our disputes two ways, by exercising our First Amendment rights and by voting. And that's the way you solve problems. You do not use the criminal justice system. And as the clip you just played, and there were some more comments that, you know, Justice Alito made, that essentially this is what they do in third world countries, where, you know, people hold on to power because they are worried that if they're not in power, they're going to end up being indicted and their family is going to lose everything.
Yeah, well, I wonder who you're talking about.
But go back.
You just raised a very good point. You know, when Trump got elected, one of the questions he was asked was, "Are you going to prosecute Hillary Clinton for all the violations that James Comey, you know, credibly accused her of?" That he then turned around and said he wasn't going to do anything about. But all of the clear violations of law, and Trump said, "No, it would be bad for the country." Remember that?
Yeah, and this is what look, people aren't stupid. And even the people that, you know, aren't lawyers or aren't part of the criminal justice system, fundamentally, they can take a step back and look at the way Donald Trump's being treated. So let's say in the documents case, well, people are like, well, wait a minute, Joe Biden had all these documents and top secret files. Why isn't he being prosecuted?
In his garage.
And then the special counsel, they say, oh, well, it's different because Donald Trump was not cooperative and he tried to conceal, you know, evidence. It's like, well, wait a minute. If that's the standard, then why isn't Hillary Clinton being prosecuted for, you know, not turning over her hard drive and, you know, refusing to cooperate when there was the investigation about, you know, all of her classified emails? And so that's the part I think that is so hypocritical and dangerous because, look, if you as a prosecutor or you as the Department of Justice are going to say, well, wait a minute, we're going to hold – this is the standard. If you do X, Y, Z, you're going to be accountable. Well, then why, either Joe Biden should be prosecuted for having those classified documents, or if the standard is going to be, oh, wait a minute, it's because he didn't cooperate and he hid them, then why isn't Hillary Clinton being prosecuted? And, you know, and even in the New York, in the theory of the New York case, in the New York criminal – state criminal case – I know I'm bouncing around, but it's all related, right?
I know, yeah,
In the New York criminal case, the theory is that Trump used campaign funds allegedly to do something that, you know, that benefited him personally, or legal funds that were really political campaign funds, whatever. But wait a minute, Hillary Clinton's campaign in 2016 paid for the Steele dossier out of their legal funds, and that was clearly for political reasons. So once again, if the theory is we're going to prosecute people for using legal funds when they're really political funds, then why isn't Hillary Clinton being prosecuted for her campaign using legal funds to fund the Steele dossier?
Mark Brnovich, in the minute that we have left, I led the show off today with the proposition that maybe people's eyes are starting to get opened, and maybe these prosecutions are overplaying their hand. Maybe these leftist university administrations are going to have to figure out the hard way. They've gone too far to the left. Do you sense that people are starting to wake up to this?
Well, I think absolutely. And what is going on at our universities is such a joke. I mean, Paul, come on. They are able to get rid of Republican speakers and Republican clubs within a day, but they can't get rid of all these protesters,
yeah, really,
you know, that are sleeping in tents. And I look, graduation is a time to look forward to the future. And so I think for many of these California university protesters and these students, they're going to vote for Joe Biden and Gavin Newsom. These 10 cities are exactly what their future is going to look like. And so I do think that people are being more aware of how ridiculous and hypocritical the left is. But unfortunately, we have these bastions of neo-Marxism and leftism. And, you know, really, it's our American universities, and we as taxpayers are subsidizing a lot of that. And so, you know, it's one of the reasons when I sued Arizona State University over skyrocketing tuition. And during the course of that litigation, I mean, you are 2.5 times more likely to have a Marxist/communist teaching your kid or you if you're in the soft sciences, the social sciences, than you are that someone versus someone that identifies as a Republican or a conservative.
Absolutely. I mean,
so that's what the university is. They're a feeding ground for neo-Marxist, you know, wannabe revolutionaries.
And right, and there, sadly, because of the clock, we have to leave it. Mark Brnovich, former Arizona Attorney General, thanks. Have a great weekend.
Right on, Paul.
Thanks a lot. There he goes, Mark Brnovich. Here we go with the bottom of the ninth coming up here on Fox Across America. Stay put.
Watch Jimmy's new show Saturday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern on Fox News Channel.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Wow, that 3 hours went by quick. Seems like I just got here. Paul, glad you're sitting in for Jimmy Failla. Jimmy will be back on Monday, I promise, and he will return from the swamp. I'm sure a better man for the experience. You couldn't pay me, but he's down there doing cool things. And by the way, his show on Saturday night, you're going to watch. That's what he's working on. Meanwhile, back here at the ranch, let's end the show on an upbeat note. I wanted to start on an upbeat note. Want to end on an upbeat note. Things are a little crazy. You know, we have a president being tried for felony crimes. We have campus protests that are reminiscent of the dark days of 1968. A lot of things going on. You say, wow, that's really bad. You know what? I think the result of all of this is going to be working out to our favor, because ordinary people who are not that engaged are looking at things and saying, well, this is crazy. This can't go on. Eyes are being opened. And if you want to really, really change the landscape, be careful to go vote in school board elections. Be careful who you vote for attorney general. Be careful who you vote for district attorney, because those are the people that are really making the difference. And if you don't believe that, ask George Soros, because he put a lot of money into the district attorney campaigns across the country that are wreaking such havoc. So people are starting to pay attention to that, and they learn from it. And so America is a very amazing self-correcting thing that we can get way out of line and find a way to get ourselves back. So let's be of good cheer. We have an election coming up. We have a mechanism for fixing these problems. We can use it to good effect. Jimmy will be back on Monday. Paul Gleiser, have enjoyed sitting in for Jimmy. Thanks to Josh and Mike in the control room. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.